It's time for the most insightful wrestling show today.
Our backs are to the walls, ladies and gentlemen, and we have run out of places to hide.
Wrestling Weekly is on the air.
Glory, glory, hallelujah.
We got a great show for you. Right, it's great.
Hi, gang. This is Fiend Gene Okerlund.
Hey, this is Kevin Nash. You're listening to Doc Young.
I've never heard of a bigger baby in my life
than the legendary Les Thatcher.
I'm Mel. Les Thatcher.
You're listening to Wrestling Weekly.
Thank you.
Please join us in the chat room at WrestlingWeekly.com to submit questions for tonight's guests.
That's pretty damn cool.
That is cool.
And now, your host for Wrestling Weekly, Doc Young and legendary Les Thatcher.
Welcome, everybody, to Wrestling Weekly. I'm Doc Young, alongside my broadcast partner, the legendary Les Thatcher. It's Wrestling Weekly. It's another week, Les.
Yeah, it has, but, you know, actually, I feel bad about you. Don't call me legendary tonight because we really have somebody that's legendary on the show with us, an old friend of mine. We did some road trips together when I was running the tours for WCW back in 82 and 83, and just welcome Tito Santana to the show.
Tito, thanks for being on Wrestling Weekly tonight. You've got, of course, the new DVD that's coming out from kayfabecommentaries.com. It's called My Side of the Story, Tito versus Greg. It's good stuff. I liked it.
I thought I just got a sample of that myself, and I thought it was really well put together, and, you know, it is a great story.
You know, Tito, what I thought when I watched it, the great contrast, I think, for somebody young is the way you guys talk about the length of the program and how you handle the program. And I know at one point Greg mentioned, where they had talked about him dropping the belt because Vince was mad at somebody or something because Morocco didn't show up or whatever it was. And he said, no, we're only 3 months in. I thought, you know, in this day and age, that's 10 programs, 3 months. And you guys were just getting a real good start.
Yeah, you know, Greg told me that Howard Finkel told him that our feud was the longest running feud in the history of the WWE, which is, you know, the WWF. I mean, we wrestled each other probably for about a year and a half, and, you know, they point all that out on that DVD, which is, you know, excellent.
Yeah, you know, and that amazes me as I watch the programs today is that there's so much longevity when it was handled properly, and it just doesn't seem that even crosses anybody's mind anymore. You know, I mean, and of course, when you guys made any contact at all on television, it was brief. You know, it was maybe the heel hit, you know, Pearl Harbor you or something, and then taken off. And but the whole idea was to make people buy tickets to the house shows, and of course, you know, the pay-per-views once those started. And, of course, the house shows are kind of secondary now with the pay-per-views being the main thrust. But it seems like they give away the store on television on Mondays and Friday nights, and then they wonder why the pay-per-views don't draw more money.
Yeah, I'm not really familiar with the ratings because, to be honest with you, I don't watch it too much. You know, I'm just, not that I have anything against it, I'm just so busy that there's other more important things that I like to watch, and when I do have time to sit down and watch television, it's just a different ball game. You know, the wrestlers that are there, I don't think they have the talent to hold the wrestling fans' attention the way we did, and besides, the wrestling fan from now has been educated a lot different than the way they were educated with us. You know, the wrestling fan now expects more violence, and they expect, you know, deadly maneuvers in the ring, you know, where, you know, when in our time, and I believe it can still be done if you get two good wrestlers in there that can, you know, wrestle a match and grab some holds and and do the right things at the right time. You know, it can be done, but
sure.
they don't have the wrestlers that know how to do it. You know.
Well, you know, the kids today don't have what I had before you and what you had when you came up, and that's the territories to get an education in.
It's a shame, you know. It's kind of sad that, you know, you either have to be with Vince McMahon, or you're not anywhere. You know, the experience that you're going to get wrestling, and there's a lot of independent shows, but the experience that you're going to get, you know, is like the blind leading the blind. You know,
yeah.
The only way you learn is when you step into the ring with somebody that has more experience than you do, that can teach you what some of the things that he knows and share his knowledge, and that's not happening. And I kind of feel sorry for the guys. You know, you look at the WWE, how many guys do they have? You know, they have Shawn Michaels and Undertaker and maybe one or two other guys. I think Bob Orton's son, you know, picked it up real quick. But other than those three guys, and I don't watch it that much.
Yeah, I know. You know, and you mentioned that. Let's give the fans and the listeners some idea. Why you said you didn't get a chance to watch it, but you're so busy. But your wife owns a hairstyling shop or beauty shop, whatever. I'm not sure what the politically correct name is today.
I think it's a salon.
A salon, excuse me. Okay, Doc. But anyway, you help her out a little bit, but you also are teaching school and coaching basketball. Talk a little bit about that.
Well, you know, it's believe it or not, our hair salon is in Saucasana, New Jersey. I teach, you know, in the same town. We have, you know, our hair salon is at the Roxbury Mall, and we do get a lot of fans, and, you know, it's important for me to be there because a lot of the fans or a lot of the clients that we have really enjoy talking to me. You know, it's a very friendly atmosphere, and, you know, a lot of them can't believe it when they see me grabbing the broom, and I'm the one that's whipping the hair up, and I'm the one folding the towels in the back, and you know I just like to mingle with our clients, and you know a lot of them just can't believe that I do that, you know, and for me, I just do it because you know in a way it's fun and it's a way to save money. When you have a business, you try to cut all the shortcuts and keep as much for the company as you can, and you know that's what my wife and I do. You know,
sure.
Try to help out as much as we can. And, you know, I teach in the middle school. I teach Spanish. This is the beginning of my 11th year. When I quit wrestling, I got off the road. I wanted to be home with my kids. You know, we raised three boys. My oldest son is beginning his second or in his second year of law school at American University.
Wow.
My middle son graduated from Princeton, and he's in Seoul, Korea right now working for the government, human rights. And my middle son is majoring in finances. He's in James Madison in Virginia. And, you know, between my kids coaching basketball and, you know, the hair salon and teaching, I don't have a lot of time.
Well, the one thing it sounds like, the boys are all pointing in the right direction that, when they're, you know, when they've got a solid footing in the business world, Dad can retire because they're sure going to make enough money to take care of you.
I think they're headed in the right direction. You know,
yeah.
It was never. I took the idea of any of them ever becoming a wrestler at a very young age. I asked them if they wanted to be away from their kids as much as I was away from them, and you know I think it left a big dent in their thought of becoming a wrestler. You know,
right?
Education was always you know what we talked about, and you know, luckily they have their mother's brain, and you know they're very smart kids.
We got some questions from the live chat room at WrestlingWeekly.com, and we've also got some from our new message boards. Drama has a post on here, and he asks you, Tito, some questions about Shawn Michaels. He said, what was it like working with Shawn Michaels at WrestleMania 8? Did you see him becoming as big as he did? And do you think he deserved the push deserved a push but never got it?
Everybody saw a lot of potential in Shawn Michaels. And I think the only reason that it took as long as it did for him to get it was because of his personality.
Yeah.
Shawn didn't have a lot of friends. He was, you know, Shawn was for Shawn and didn't really care what anybody else thought about him. So it took a while for Shawn to figure out, you know, if I'm going to make it in this business, I kind of need to change a little bit. And he really didn't have to change a lot. A lot of the fans know about Shawn Michaels' change of life. You know, he's, and I really believe that he's sincere. He's, you know, found God, and you know, and for me to see that, I hope it's true. You know, I'm very happy for Shawn Michaels. He deserved a break. I mean, you know, a lot of people put me over, and it was my turn to help somebody get over, and he was able to you know, take it a long ways. He's been there for a long time. I think I don't know who I was talking to today. Him and The Undertaker have been there for probably 19, 20 years. I mean, God, yeah. What a run that was.
That's quite
a
while.
You know, you brought it when you mentioned Shawn Michaels and you guys working together. Something you mentioned on the DVD that really caught my attention too is knowing what a babyface should do, and we're talking about the current crop or generation, and that's one of the things that I see when I go to the independent shows. These guys don't know what a babyface is supposed to be. I spent the lion's share of my career as one, and I you were for the most part, right? In fact, I don't know if you ever worked heel. But,
I never got to work heel. I wanted to, but Vince McMahon didn't.
You're just too sweet a guy. You can't. but you know, that's the thing, too, I think, Tito, is is a lot of the guys just think, well, we go out and we do high spots and we do punches, kicks, and somebody will decide I'm a baby face and they'll dislike the other guy because I'm more handsome or something like that. But, you know, I think one of the things, a strong thing about baby faces, a lot of the kids today don't get, is that we did look at the lights a lot simply because that's how we got sympathy. I mean, the heel steal, and not when I say look at the lights, not just jobbing, you know, necessarily in the middle, but the heels, you know, cheating you and stealing the fall. And
right.
I think that's where the kids are missing the boat today.
Well, you know, I learned this with Vern Gagne is, you know, you could drop a match and keep the fire. You know, Vern Gagne, whenever they screwed the baby face, you're right. The heel always had the trunks or always had the ropes, and the baby face could jump up and complain to the referee, and the referee wouldn't listen. You know, the heel had his arm raised, and then the baby face was able to make a little bit of a comeback, and the heel would run. You know, and you would leave the babyface strong. You know, you got to know how to sell, you know, and I learned that. I would say that I attribute, you know, I don't know where you learned this, but when I learned the business, all they kept talking to me is you got to learn timing.
Right.
And I used to think to myself, timing, is the only thing I know about timing is what I'm wearing, my wrist, my watch. You know, I can tell you what time it is. And I never knew what Mr. Fuji was saying. And I remember working in Wildwood with Mr. Fuji and laying there, and he had me in a hole. And he'd say, not yet, kid, not yet, kid. And I said, God, I mean, Fuji's going to screw me. He's going to eat me up. And then it was a 20-minute match, and I didn't realize how over Fuji was. And then about 18 and a half, Fuji starts telling me to start shaking a little bit. Mm-hmm. And then when I started shaking, you know, he told me to listen to the crowd. And that's when I really first started hearing the crowd. And the more I shook, the more the crowd. And you know, that's, I'm sure you know this yourself. We had so many guys that could guide us and teach us.
Right.
And, you know, I got up, and then he pretty much told me everything to do on my comeback. You know, and I had a teacher, you know. And the more you do that, you know, eventually you can do those things by yourself. You know, you know what the fans want.
Sure.
You know, we learned, and I'm sure you learned the same way. They'd always tell you, listen to the crowd. They'll tell you what they want. you know, and it's impossible for these kids to listen to the crowd and to know what the fans want because nobody's taught them that.
Yeah, you're right. Well, you know, and the other thing you mentioned, like on the comeback, you always had a lot of fire. That was one of the things that I was taught too. You got to have a lot of fire. But the other thing is, you got to sell to position yourself to make a comeback. And I think I see and talking to just this past weekend, I was down in Natchez, Mississippi, and did a weekend training camp and with some of the kids there and watching their matches on Friday night. I told the one young man, he said, well, you know, the people didn't respond a lot to my comeback. I said, well, because you didn't really have a comeback. You and the other guy were just trying to trade in spots. Mm-hmm. And then, like, it was, you wanted to hold a sign up and say, this is my comeback. And he never really sold down, you know, and right. and got the people behind him in terms of sympathy. And he looked at me like, huh? You know, because he was, and then I explained it. And he said, oh, okay. But here again, he had not been taught by it. Or like you and I, he never had the elder statesman, the older veteran heels or the baby faces, for that matter, to work with and talk to learn that.
Right. Well, you know, I still do a few independent shows, and to me, when you the only way to really get a crowd to build a comeback is eventually, you know, you can only take so much of an ass kicking.
Right.
I hope I can use this.
Yeah.
You know, but eventually the heel has to grab a hold.
Sure.
You know, and for the fan to settle down and for the fan to feel like they're participating and helping you get out of that hole. And you're coming out, and every time you're coming, you know, they're healing you down, and you're coming out a little bit more, and you're healing them down. And, you know, you also have to have timing of when it's ready for you to explode, and you know, and nothing's going to stop you. You know, and it's to me, it's grabbing that hole and you know, I hate it for somebody to, you know, work on my legs because you got to make a comeback on your feet, you know.
Sure.
You could make a comeback with an injured leg, but it was a lot more difficult of a comeback, you know.
Yeah.
I prefer to for somebody to work my head or my arm or, you know, an upper body part where I can, you know, start coming up, you know, and have my feet ready to go and, you know, do some aerial maneuvers once I got going.
Right.
It is an art, you know.
It most definitely.
And you don't learn it overnight, I'm sure.
No.
I was told, you know, Greg Gagne, you know, Greg Gagne, 185 pounds. And I listened to him because, you know, as little as he was, I thought he was a great worker. He told me, he says, you shouldn't throw a punch to the face till you've been in the business at least 5 years. And, you know, I listened to him. I practice my punches in the stomach where I could just fire in the stomach and not have to worry about missing by 12 inches or, you know, and then working my way up, you know, to the neck or stuff. And, you know, you have to be pretty much of a solid veteran before you can start throwing a punch to the eye or to the nose or to the teeth, you know. And some people just don't know how to throw a good punch.
You're right. You're right. One thing, I'm going to let Doc jump in here too, but the one thing I caught that was on the DVD, and then I'm going to shut up for a minute, was that the first time you and Greg worked was in Witches in North Attleboro. And I laughed. I said, I bet 90%. Of course, it's not there anymore. But one of the early matches when I started in 1960, that was Tony Santos out of Boston, who I broke in with, the promoter, ran Witches every Friday night. But it was a great little club to work.
It was a great place.
Yeah.
I mean, it only held about, maybe, it seemed like the most you could put in there was maybe a couple thousand people.
Yeah.
But the acoustics in the building were fantastic, and, you know, it was always packed. I mean, the fans were unbelievable there. I used to love to wrestle there.
Yeah, it was a great little venue. But, but of course, clubs like that aren't run anymore. Nobody runs that those places anymore.
No, it's kind of sad, you know. It's sad what's become of our business because I'm sure you know, and you see it all the time because I know you're still involved with it. You know, all these guys that are trying to be promoters and I give them a lot of credit because they're running independent shows, and you see guys that have no reason or right as far as I'm
they're not really professional wrestlers. They're pretending. Let's go pretend to be wrestlers, and that's basically what it amounts to, I think.
Yeah, I did a seminar because I do seminars once in a while myself, and you know I'm looking at all these really young kids, and you know I said, you know, your ultimate goal is to get it to the WWE, you know, and at one point you're going to have to stand in front of Vince McMahon. And Vince McMahon is going to look at you, and you're going to have to say to yourself, what do I have to offer to Vince McMahon for him to consider me? Mm-hmm. You know, and a lot of those guys, you know, hadn't put 30 minutes in the weight room.
Right.
I mean, I would say 85% of the wrestlers used to go in the ring and train or lift weights, you know, either or. There was some kind of training going on, you know, during the week.
Right.
You know, and some of these guys, they don't train. You know, they pay for the school and they buy tights and they buy boots and don't see the inside of a gym to, you know, to develop a body. You know, I never got into the steroids. You know, you don't have to have
a
steroid body, but you know, you know, most of us did look like athletes back then.
You're right. You're absolutely right. Yeah, well said. You're absolutely right. Doc, you still with
me? Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay.
Powerbomb Media says, what made you eventually leave the WWF?
Well, Vince McMahon gave me the gimmick of El Matador.
Right.
And I didn't think that I was being used right. I think I had a lot to offer, and I really don't understand, because I had already proven that I could draw some money. You know, I drew money with Mr. Wonderful. I drew money with Piper. I drew money with Greg Valentine. When I was a champion, we had we had matches where they were, you know, chasing me, and we did good business. And when he gave me the Matador gimmick, I had gone in to talk to him before, and you know, he says, I'm not done with you yet. He says, I'm going to make you a Matador, and I'm going to give you a big push. Well, you know, from what I understand, he spent close to $500,000 when I went to Mexico to train to become a Matador and to rent the arena for a whole week and then bring all the cameras and, you know, a lot of work. I was told that he spent a lot of money, so I thought that he was going to push me. And when I got back, I asked Vince, I said, Vince, what kind of merchandising? Because, you know, at Matador, I figured I had all kinds of thoughts of all kinds of different things you could merchandise, you know, mm-hmm. with little bulls and capes and swords and, you know, the small capes and the big capes. And I said, what are your plans for merchandising for El Matador? He said, call the merchandising department. So I called the merchandising department, and they told me that the only thing that was coming out was the little doll.
Yeah.
No, it was about a six-inch doll. And I said, are you sure? She goes, yeah, that's all that's coming out.
Did you feel that?
I came home and I told my wife, I said, they don't have any plans for El Matador. You know, so, they can't say that Matador didn't get over.
Right.
Matador didn't get over probably because Vince McMahon didn't really want it to get over.
Did you feel like the El Matador gimmick was a message to you?
Yeah. Yeah, it just he was done with me, and I believe he just kept me around for another year and a half to, you know, to keep me from going to the WCW, because, you know, I thought I was a hot commodity. I mean, I was pretty young. I was in my prime. Mm-hmm. But, you know, I just, at that point, I retired in 1993. My kids were at an age where I felt like I wanted to be around, and I wanted to enjoy them, and I wanted to coach them in football and basketball and different sports and be there to see their events and their birthdays. And I gave my notice, and I never looked back. You know, I just, you know, I don't know if Vince even thinks about me, but I do have to say that I'm one of the few guys that has never gone back looking for work.
All right. Rhode Island Red says, what are your thoughts on feuding with Dangerous Danny Davis when he went from ref to wrestler?
Oh, I mean, that's an example of Vince McMahon wanting to get somebody over. Mm-hmm. I mean, here you have a referee, Danny Davis, to me, who had no business in the ring, and all of a sudden, you know, the people hated the guy. You know, it you know, it made sense, you know, and Vince pushed him hard enough. You know, when you're involved and you're a pro, and both of you guys are, if you're gonna get it, if somebody tells you to get involved in an angle, we all have our own egos, you know. So you're gonna go out there yourself and try to do the best that you can to help make sure that whatever you're involved in is gonna get over, you know. And even working with Denny Davis, I thought we had some fantastic matches for what he had to offer.
ZC says, your thoughts on Rick Martel and his ego, if he even has an ego, and your thoughts on Strikeforce, please.
Rick Martel is probably one of the nicest guys in the world. He's had both his hips replaced.
Wow.
I came into becoming Strikeforce out of coincidence because his ex-partner and him didn't get along, and he took off, and then Vince offered to put us together. First, he was going to call us buddy guards. Not buddy guards. What was he going to call us? Patrol. Border Patrol.
Border Patrol, okay.
That was going to be our gimmick, and at the time, there had been a couple of instances where Mexicans had died in trains where they were trying to come into the country because of heat. That was one instance, and another instance crossing the Arizona desert, they had found quite a few dead, you know, and I said, well, I believe if you name us the Border Patrol, you know, we're going to be heels with, you know, all the Mexicans that have died, you know, trying to cross the border.
Mm-hmm.
And he agreed, and that's when he gave us the name Strikeforce. I thought we got over instantly, and, you know, we got a push, and, I mean, God, how could you not get over? Rick Martel is one of the greatest workers in our business, and, you know, I was not too shabby myself, and, you know, we were working for one purpose, and that was to get the team over, and, you know, we worked hard, and we got it over. So I don't have any animosity. I think when they made him the model, I never expected Rick Martel to be able to do that, you know. But I think he got a lot of advice and a lot of training from and a lot of talk with Pat Patterson. I think Pat Patterson really helped him a lot.
All right. How'd you feel being inducted into the Hall of Fame?
When I got the call, I've mentioned this before. I went to the Hall of Fame, the very first Hall of Fame in Baltimore, I believe, when they inducted Pedro Morales and Bobo Brazil and a few others. And that was a know-nothing thing, you know. I just said, God, what a bunch of crap this was. So when I came home, you know, I told my wife, I said, there was nothing, you know. I didn't feel like, you know, those guys were put on any pedestal at all, you know. And there were a bunch of old-timers that deserved a lot of much better recognition. And I didn't feel anything. So to me, you know, it's all about money, you know. Look, I'm sure you guys feel the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Howard Finkel called me, and he says, Tito, he says, we're thinking about inducting you into the Hall of Fame. And then he kept on talking, and, you know, I wasn't going to accept until I heard that we were going to get $5,000, which was a pretty good payoff.
Right.
And then, you know, they flew my family. They got us 2 limousines. They got us 5 rooms at the Hyatt Regency in downtown New York. And, you know, I never realized how big it was going to be, you know, because I hadn't been around the WWF for a while. I really hadn't seen the growth that it had undergone as far as the WrestleManias and the pay-per-views. And we arrived, you know, in 2 limousines. My mom and my brother and sisters came from Texas. off, and I mean, there was people there from Japan, from Europe, and they all, you know, came. And I hadn't done this in a while. I mean, I retired in '93 to have fans rush to me to get my autograph and to get pictures, and you know, it was a great feeling, and the whole weekend was really unbelievable. If I would have had to do it all over again, knowing what I know now, it wouldn't have taken the $5,000. You know, I really felt proud to be inducted into the Hall of Fame. You know, I believe the Hall of Fame means something now.
Now, I have a question, and I've always wanted to ask you this question, Tito, since I was a little boy, because, of course, I used to watch you on WWF TV. For those who don't know, I'm part Latino, and so when I'm watching these matches, and you have Bobby Heenan and Jesse Ventura on commentary, they're making little, you know, racial comments. They're supposed to be heels. I understand this.
Right.
But did those comments bother you? Were they offensive to you? Because they were to me at the time, and I was a little boy.
Yeah, because you were a mark, you know. That's
he's still a mark, Tito.
and that's what they were supposed to accomplish with that. Bobby Heenan and Jesse the Body were over so strong, mm-hmm. that if those guys liked you, they were going to take the time to create some little remarks like that. And those little remarks really helped me get over. And it took me a while to figure out. I mean, I used to go to arenas, and you know, whenever I would hear somebody holler out "Chico," you know, I thought they were being a little bit on the prejudice side.
Mm-hmm.
And it took me a while to figure out they're calling me Chico because Jesse keeps saying that on television.
Right.
You know, even me, I was, I guess, a little bit of a mark, and you know, and not realizing what was taking place on television.
Do you know,
they were helping me. You know, they both liked me, and they were both trying to help me, and they did help me.
Do you think that would fly on TV today in the days of PC?
Well, I don't know, but a lot of other crap flies on TV.
That, it sure does. That's a lot worse than that.
You're right. I mean, just like the, you know, the gestures that they do on TV, and, you know, God, what they do now on TV is pretty much almost life sex, you know, without the sex.
Sometimes,
you know,
yeah.
You know, it's horrible. It's not, to me, it's not a show for, if I had a 3 or 4 year old son, there's no way that he was going to watch. He'd be watching professional wrestling.
Swax in the chat room says, "Have you found any interesting storylines lately?"
I don't watch it, so I really don't know what's going on. I mean, mm-hmm. to be honest with you, because I'm like any man. I own my remote control when I'm at home, and you know, as I'm going through the channels, if I happen to watch, you know, the wrestling's on, and if I see somebody that I know, I might keep it on for a little while longer, or I sometimes watch to see, well, let me see, you know, what kind of work these two guys are doing, and you know, to see how they're going to get out of what they're building in the match. And most of the time, they just don't know what to do. You know, like we were talking about, a baby face just doesn't know how to make a comeback, how to start a comeback, how to continue it, how to keep the fans. And the fans are so ready for that, you know. And
I'm ready for it.
The guys just don't know that. You know, they just know how to do it.
You've got an autobiography coming out soon. Tell us about it.
I just finished writing the book, and it's going to be coming out on April. It's been sent to the publishers, and they're going to be, you know, from what I understand, they just came out with a book on Super Bowl, and as soon as the Super Bowl is over with, they're going to start, you know, putting the finishing touches on my book.
Does it have a name yet?
I believe it's going to be called the Tito Santana, or Tito Santana Tales in the Ring, or Tales in the Ring by Tito Santana.
Excellent. What can we expect out of the book? Some kind of stories?
lot of quick bites on incidents that happen in the road. Unbeknown to me, I started writing a diary. Me being a Mexican, I figured that I had done pretty well for myself. I thought about someday, I said, I might write a book. I might be able to inspire somebody to, you know, because I, you know, came from a migrant background, grew up as a migrant worker, and have done pretty well for myself. And, you know, I always, at a very young age, I always dreamed about, you know, getting away from migrant life, and I was able to accomplish it totally on my own. I went to college. I put myself through college. I got a scholarship. I couldn't count on my dad to give me any money at all. And, you know, to have gone as far as I have gone, I figured I'd be an inspiration for somebody. And, you know, there are black people that are dreaming, and they're Mexicans, and they're poor white people that, you know, don't see, you know, how they're going to get out of the hole. And I think I could be an inspiration. I talk a little bit about our life, a little bit about drugs, a little bit about, I really don't mention any names of anybody that's doing that because I don't think it's my part, but I, you know, divorces that some of the guys have gone through, I think if people read through that, they can see who I'm talking about. But, you know, being married to a professional wrestler is very difficult. You know, we were on the road all the time, and some of us kind of forgot that we were married, and, you know, and forgot who was important. You know, the people that they left behind at home, the importance that they were in our lives, and you know, there's just a lot of crap that was not easy for us to go through. And it's kind of something that needs to be told. And
it sounds like an excellent
reason. You know, Tito, Teddy DiBiase and I were talking about, and I said, we all talk about paying our dues and the life on the road and how tough it is, but I said the people behind the scenes that have been supportive of us, family, friends, that have sacrificed for us to make it in this business are the untold heroes of the whole thing.
Yeah, I mean, and how many of the guys have you seen that have had wives that were with them through thick and thin before they made it, and as soon as the guy made a big name and started making some big money, all of a sudden they end up with a young girl.
Yeah, you're right.
And leave, you know, make the big bucks and leave the wives that were with them through the heart, you know, hardships of the business, you know, and I just could never understand. You know, there's no halo over my head, but one thing that I did know, I went through a divorce with my parents, and I just could not understand how a father was willing to lose his family. Even up until now, you know, my kids and my wife are so important. I wouldn't want to give it up for anything, you know. Especially after I made it big. I mean, I would want them to enjoy, to reap the benefits together. You know, not split the basket half and half, and you know, and enjoy it with somebody else.
Right.
Sure.
One last question before we let you get out of here, Rocco. Would like to know how you would like to be remembered.
I would like to be remembered as a professional wrestler who, whenever he stepped into the ring, he gave it everything he had, whether there was 200 people or 50,000 people, and them to know that I have always thrived and really worked at being a good role model for kids. You know, kids have always been important to me and continue to be important. And, you know, I do know that, you know, the kids that watch any professional athlete, they are looking for role models, and a lot of times, you know, you guys see a lot of garbage on television, you know, guys committing murders or getting busted or whatever, I don't think it's good as a role model, you know, and some kids follow those bad examples, and we need more good examples than bad examples, and there are a lot of good athletes, you know, there are a lot of good wrestlers that have remained married, but I believe there's more that have gotten divorced, and you know, God, just think about all the ones that are not around anymore,
all right,
you know,
sure.
that have passed, you know, it's kind of sad. You know.
Well said. Guys, check out more about Tito at TitoSantanaWrestling.com. It's his official website.
Leah.
Pick up the DVD at KayfabeCommentaries.com. It's called My Side of the Story, Tito versus Greg. Tito, I want to thank you for being on the show, man.
Well, thank you very much.
Tito, it's been fun going down memory lane with you a little bit. God bless you, my friend. You're a class act, and I only wish you the best.
Thank you very much, and you guys take care of yourselves.
All right, buddy.
Tito Santana here on Wrestling Weekly, guys. Coming up a little bit later in the program, guys, we've got Bruce Mitchell coming up from PW Torch. He's going to be joining us for the Hot Topic. Yeah, we're kind of doing everything in reverse tonight, but that's pretty cool. That's all right. It was a little change of pace, Les.
Well, yes. It doesn't hurt to change pace. It keeps you awake.
It does. It keeps you on my toes. Because you know what happens when I'm not on my toes.
Yeah, yes, I do. I talk to myself a lot.
Check out the new forums at WrestlingWeekly.com, guys. We've got we're gearing up for Survivor Series, and you can earn your WW coins for Survivor Series because we're going to have the big big bookmaker application put onto our forums. And, why do you think that's funny?
I'm laughing because it sounds like you're running a book.
Yeah, allow me to say this is not real money, guys. This is for play. But it's our way of playing the pay-per-view prediction game with you all. That's basically what it is. Let's get into some of the news before we get Bruce on.
Let me shoot a couple plugs in here real quick,
sure.
If you don't mind, okay?
Mm-hmm.
My next weekend training camp is Richmond, Virginia, March 14th, 15th, and 16th with Ground Zero Wrestling. You can check out the information at www.gxwwrestling.com or call Dave McLeod at 804-356-0583 and join us. You know, we're going to – and an old friend of mine who was a hell of a baby face in his day, Dickie Steinborn, lives up in Richmond, talked to him last week, and he's going to show up. And the deal in Natchez, I had a good time. We had a good turnout. We did a lot of basic work with a lot of kids who were just getting their feet wet in the business. So it was, you know, it was a real good time. Mississippi Combat Alliance is trying to, you know, develop a good solid base. Justin Thornton and his crew are really working hard to do that. So,
excellent.
It was, it was a good time. And I had fun. What can I say?
Cool. Did you find any diamonds in the rough out there in Nashville?
The New Orleans Fight Club, which is John Saxon, Steve Anthony, and the lovely Danielle is the manager. You would just go crazy with Danielle. I don't even want to talk to you about that.
Send pictures. That's all.
No, I don't want to hurt you. I don't want your heart to flutter or anything. No. Well, I'll tell you what I like about the team. Saxon's a veteran. He's been around. Gosh, I'm not even sure how long, 15 years or more. And Steve Anthony is a good young – well, in fact, he was the outstanding athlete at Harley's NOAA camp back in September. In fact, he's getting ready to move to Eldon to train with Harley in hopes of getting the chance to go to Japan to train with the dojo there. But the team is solid simply because John brings the veteran background, and Steve brings the fire and vigor of the young guys, and Danielle brings the sexy look, and she knows how to work a corner too. I mean, she's just not eye candy.
Mm-hmm.
She understands why she's out there, and they're a good solid team. So if you're down around the Gulf Coast, they work Louisiana and Alabama and Mississippi and Texas, I guess a little bit too. High-intensity wrestling is what they're trying to do is along the lines of a territory again, and they're running in the three states: Mississippi, Alabama, Louisiana, and it's set up where there's a different person or an individual in the area, whatever the town is, that you know handles the publicity and basically promotes the town, and then they try to use the you know, the same talent or the best of the talent, the foundation in all the clubs, and they're just getting it off the ground. But, you know, it's hopefully it'll work out and, you know, turn out good for everybody. So, and that's good wrestling country. It really is.
Yeah. Programming note, guys, the USA Network has announced that Monday Night Raw will not be preempted on February 11th, as previously reported, for the first time. This is a big story to me. The USA Network is ending its coverage of the Westminster Dog Show at 9 so that Raw can air in its regular time slot. Hours 2 and 3 of the Dog Show are going to air on CNBC, a sister station of the USA Network, beginning at 9 p.m. This is the first time ever that's been done.
Well, you know what? The Dog Show doesn't draw the big numbers. It was just a prestigious thing, I
right.
think, with the channel. And I've seen that at a regional level. I remember talking to a station manager in the Tri-Cities, John City, Bristol, Kingsport area, back when I was producing Southeastern Wrestling out of the CBS affiliate in Knoxville. And the programming manager told me, he said, you know, we were talking about where we were being preempted one Saturday for tennis. He said, you know, Les, I play tennis. But the truth is, we make more money off your show and these other shows than we can off tennis. But it's a prestige thing,
right?
You know, for some reason, you know, it's the white tennies and all the upper class thinks your station has got a lot more
class.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
If you're not running that old wrestling, so whatever, whatever. So finally, USA said, well, instead of that, let's make some money.
But the
Dog Show's still going to be on. It's just they're going to another, you know, one of the sister stations.
Yeah,
opposed to WWE
middle,
doing that.
In the middle of it, which I think is weird. But I think the big story here is that, you know, no matter how bad the number two promotion in the country has been doing for the last 15 years, they've always had the Westminster Dog Show to fall back on to put out a really good show when they know everybody's not going to be watching Raw. And that would be TNA in this case, and they don't have that chance anymore.
Well, you know, Tito made a point, too, about, you know, here's a guy who is, and he is, he's a class act. He's a hell of a gentleman, and he doesn't even watch the product anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not like he's not my age. He's somewhere in the middle there, you know. I mean, but that's telling commentary, whether you like it or you don't like it.
Yeah, we've had a lot of people, you know, legends on the show who don't watch anymore.
You're right. And ratings haven't been all that strong. The pay-per-view, domestically, pay-per-views are down for WWE,
mm-hmm.
and have been. You know, what's carrying the ball a lot of times is the European market, you know, with the pay-per-views and stuff. So, again, they're making more money than I am, but still, it's telling. Whether you like it or you don't like it, you
right.
know. It's not good for the industry, and I think the things that we talked about with Tito, baby faces not being baby faces, not understanding that you have to sell to make a comeback, you know. And again, I think the thing I saw on that DVD was when Greg said we were only 3 months into the program. I said, hell, you know, some programs now last 3 minutes,
right?
3 days, mm-hmm. And it's not even started before it's over, you know. But of course, that's and Greg mentions that. Well, they both talk about George Scott as who is the booker, and Greg was mentioned when he got his first break in Charlotte. I happened to be there, as a matter of fact, and was part of that when his dad went down in the plane crash, and Greg came in and they teamed him with Flair, and that was I think the first big push he got. But he was saying that George knew how to stretch a program out,
mm-hmm.
and he did, and of course. He didn't have a comic book writer or a television writer or a comedy writer writing for him, surprisingly enough.
Yeah.
You know, and he, you know, but anyway, that's, you know, that's as it is. And then, and I, you know, as you know, I love the business, but I don't watch it as with as much concentration as I used to. I honestly, if I weren't writing a column, if I weren't training people, if I wasn't doing this show, I may not watch it as much as I do, to be frank, because, like Tito said, it's sad because the guys are taught more about being showmen than they are about being professional wrestlers.
All right. According to a new report by Dave Meltzer, the Wrestling Observer, Paul White is signed a new deal with WWE. He's said to be in excellent shape, losing weight and improving his back problems since his departure from the company in 2006, and he is ready to make a big return.
Wow. Well, Paul's, I like Paul. I've always liked Paul. Paul got off at a bad, well, I should say, to a bad start. He was pushed straight to the top in WCW,
right,
due to Hogan. So he sort of copped an attitude early on that, well, I've arrived.
By his own admittance.
Before he knew how to chew gum and walk at the same time.
Right.
And but, you know, he went down there. He had his own puke can down in OVW when they were trying to get him in cardio shape. And
oh,
you know, and he busted, you know, and then, of course, he, you know, part of his back problem, I was telling a friend of mine who's close to my age the other day, he was talking about his lower back problems. I said, part of your lower back problems is part of your lower front problems.
Right.
Is that gut is pulling, no, but it's true.
Yes,
you know,
yes.
And part of Paul's, you know, a man that big, you got to understand your joints are bigger than, his joints are bigger than yours and mine, the bone structure, but still, there's a lot of stress on the on his skeletal muscles, you know, and what's holding everything up, and to put carry all that weight, and you know, to put the stress on it with the bumps and everything,
yeah,
it's tough. It really is. So good. I mean, I hope he's in great shape because I'd hate to see him come back if he weren't, because he'll end up with the same problems.
Well, supposedly the story is that when he was during his off time from WWE this last year, he had been gearing up for a boxing career. He was training for boxing, learning how to box, and Hogan was going to be his manager.
All right. Well, checks in the mail, and I respect you no more.
And this is supposedly why he's lost all this weight, why he's in such great
shape. Well, you know what I'm going to say, and again, I don't mean this in a disrespectful way. There's been a lot of big guys try boxing.
Mm-hmm.
Boxing is not wrestling. Boxing strength and size doesn't necessarily make you a great boxer.
It's true.
Probably the greatest boxer out there today is Floyd Mayweather, right?
Mm-hmm.
And who is not a big guy at all.
No.
You know, but he's quick and his hand, you know, with his hands and everything. But I've seen that pro football players and basketball players try boxing and because they're big.
Mm-hmm.
You know. So, honestly, I'm glad he didn't, because I wouldn't be interested in seeing the outcome. And again, I don't mean it disrespectfully to Paul, but I just don't think it would have been a good move.
Right. PW Insider is reporting that Ken Kennedy married over the weekend to his longtime girlfriend. WWE stars Matt Hardy and Gregory Helms were in attendance at the wedding. And Hardy has a story about it on his MySpace page. So,
I heard John Cena got married over the weekend.
Really?
Well, that's what I heard.
I didn't know that one.
No. I read it, and I don't remember what site I read it on. I mean,
I knew he was going to, but I didn't know it was this weekend. Well, that's cool.
Maybe I don't know what the deal is, but
congratulations to both of them anyway.
Yeah.
WWE has released developmental talent Derek Nyker. Aren't you familiar with him?
I'm very familiar. I started him in the business.
This was today.
And I feel very bad about it because Derek has been a hard worker. He's a good talent. He was one of the mask bodyguards on ECW for Heyman.
Along with
Doug Basham.
Right, right.
And he was down OVW, and I wondered, I hadn't seen him in OVW in a while. Derek is, I thought, a good, solid performer, and maybe that's the problem. And when I say that, am I being sarcastic? You bet your ass I am. The problem is he knows how to work.
Right.
Am I saying it because I'm, partial because he's one of my kids? No, because I'll tell you how I am with my kids. If you're crap your crap. I don't care who trained you. You know, if you don't know what you're doing, you don't know what you're doing. But Derek was a good hand. I hate to see it.
Yeah.
Well, he came up, Mike, damn it, the guy in ECW that was had the whole thing with Kelly when ECW first started.
Mike Knox.
Yeah. They that's how I met Knox. Derek played a little Major League Baseball and was a catcher, as a matter of fact.
Huh.
He met Dr. Tom, and I think actually hooked up with him at a tryout camp or something. And Doc said, here, go see this man and get a foundation under you. And he gave him my phone number and address. So Derek has family up in Dayton, which is, you know, is 50 miles up the road. So came up and, started with us and busted his hump. They were down doing an OVW tryout. I had gone down, and that's where I met Knox as well. They were a tag team out in Phoenix. Derek, I guess he still owns a home out there. I'm not sure. But I hate to see this because he's put in his time. He's worked hard, and I was hoping he was going to get a shot. Well, they were supposed to, him and
O'Reilly,
Chrissy's boyfriend,
Ryan O'Reilly.
Yeah, we're supposed to come up in ECW and actually work some house shows together, and it didn't fly for whatever reason. So
who knows? It's really fickle.
Huh?
It's really fickle. You don't know.
Yeah, you're right. And you know, and like I say, I've seen him. You know, he's a good, smooth, solid hand. I'll tell you the truth. They could have taken him and Doug Basham and turned him into a hell of a tag team in ECW instead of just being Paul's flunkies and taking bumps for other people. But anyway,
right.
It's too late to talk about that now.
Well, hopefully he'll have another chance. And
I hope so.
And there's there's other companies out there. They're not WWE, but there's other companies out there is all I can say. WWE star Dave Bautista was pulled over by an individual claiming to be an undercover police officer on January 5th in Canton, Ohio. The individual asked Bautista for his driver's license, and then Dave became suspicious because the man didn't have any police equipment on, no uniform, no badge, and only a flashing red light on his vehicle. Bautista drove off and phoned local police officers after the encounter, although the individual couldn't be tracked down. That's a weird story.
Well, yeah, I wondered if they actually knew it was Dave, or they were just pulling somebody over. I mean,
that's
you know, because
thinking.
You don't necessarily see a guy sit in a car and you know, recognize him.
Right.
You know, I don't know. But, I've heard of that happening in the past, too.
I have, too, but it was guys pulling over girls and pretending they were police officers.
Yeah, well, some people just play, you know.
That's weird, but most likely they won't be able to find out who that person was, but that's just a weird story I thought was cool to throw in there. We're going to get into some more news a little bit later. We're going to take a break right now. Bruce Mitchell from PWTorch.com, the Pro Wrestling Torch newsletter, is going to come on and talk to us. And Les, I guess you said you haven't seen this, but there was a column that came out by the man who calls himself the Wrestling Professor. And he has new ideas, new booking ways to make money in 2008.
And what is his credentials?
I don't know, but we're going to go over these, and I want to see.
Probably the fact that he came up with the name, right? Anyway, it doesn't matter. Yeah,
yeah,
cool.
Just for fun, we're going to run through these, and we're going to see.
Kick it around.
Yeah, we'll kick it around a little bit. So we're going to take a break and do that. More news coming up after that. You're listening to Wrestling Weekly. It's Doc Young and Les Thatcher. We'll be right back, guys, after this.
You're listening to WrestlingWeekly.com. We always have the scoop on the inside of professional wrestling.
Don't listen to me, people. You can find out for yourself right now at home.
Here's the latest news and information on total nonstop action wrestling. It's TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com. Log on right now and get your fix of all things TNA Wrestling. Event photos, streaming video, and all of the backstage gossip. It's just
just one click away.
Plus, right now, you can find special savings in our merchandise area with a complete line of DVDs featuring Nevermore, the best of Raven, Enigma, the best of Jeff Hardy, and Phenomenal, the best of AJ Styles. Plus, all of our monthly pay-per-view events on DVD as well. And don't forget to check out photos of our lovely ladies in the knockout section. It's your online home for total non-stop action wrestling. It's TNAWrestling.com. TNAWrestling.com.
The irresistible Doc Young.
Booyah!
The legendary Les Thatcher.
Brilliant!
The award-winning show taking the internet by storm. Wrestling Weekly.
Oh, great Odin Raven!
Every Tuesday night at 8 p.m. Eastern, 1 a.m. GMT. On WrestlingWeekly.com and WrestlingRadioNetwork.com.
He's been known to walk the walk. That's right, get out your pimpin' canes, your birth control pills, because it is time for the WR Show on Wrestling-Radio.com. He talks the talk. If you're a girl between the ages of 19 and 25 and you think you've lost your virginity, here's a bit of advice. Maybe you should go look for it. Stating the facts like they are and calling it like he sees it. These are my 15 minutes of fame. Get out of the spotlight and watch true greatness shine on Wrestling-Radio.com. Join the legend Jonathan Clark as he takes your phone calls, runs down the latest professional wrestling news, reads your emails, and joins you in the forums and reviews your feedback on one of the most controversial wrestling radio programs of all time, the WR Show. Heard every single Wednesday night from 8 until 10 p.m. Eastern. On the internet's fastest-growing internet radio promotional website, wrestling-radio.com. Who knows what Jonathan Clark will say and do and just how far he will go. He's in charge of all the action every single Wednesday night on the WR Show. Make sure you join wrestling-radio.com for one of the most groundbreaking and revolutionized websites and shows in the internet today. Wrestling-radio.com presents the WR Show. Every Wednesday from 8 until 10 p.m. Eastern Time. Make sure you join us.
What triggers the attention of a pro wrestling fan? Is it the overall ability of the superstar? Is it the angles with a mixture of drama? What drives the fans wanting to learn more about this pastime? When it reaches a boiling point and you know you're hooked on the thrill, it's no longer considered just a passion. It's an obsession.
Your favorite all-in-one online wrestling site has changed. That's right, wrestling fans. If you are obsessed with everything wrestling, check out the same site with the new name, Online World of Wrestling. As crazy as it may sound, the same content you have come to know, expect, and rely on is still there on every single page of the site under a new name. If you're looking for the most comprehensive information on the entire world of wrestling, then head on over to www.onlineworldofwrestling.com. Online World of Wrestling still supplies you with all the news and information, plus galleries and bios of your favorite all-time wrestlers. Climb aboard as we head on over to onlineworldofwrestling.com. New packaging, same great flavor.
Yo, check out the new hot wrestling shop called Mad Maniacs. With a large inventory of shirts, replica belts, and action figures, you can obtain your need for wrestling merchandise. Remember that we get fresh stock weekly, so don't forget to check it out. Also, with items coming in faster than Toys R Us and Walmart, you should never become disappointed. Plus half the price on WWE.com. Remember, that's www.madmaniacs.com.
Bud Light presents Real American Heroes.
Real American Heroes.
Today, we salute you, Mr. Pro Wrestling Wardrobe Designer.
Mr. Pro Wrestling Wardrobe Designer.
while lesser designers would shy away from putting 300-pound men in spandex, you embrace it.
Yes, you do.
Pushing fashion to its limits, literally, you pair tights with a cape, a leotard with a mask, leather boots with a thong.
Oh, looking good.
All understated ways of saying, I'm going to rip your head off and look fabulous doing it. So crack open an ice-cold Bud Light, Mr. Pro Wrestling Wardrobe Guy, because without you, a man crushing another man's head in his arms would just look silly.
Mr. Pro Wrestling Wardrobe Designer.
Bud Light Beer, Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis, Missouri.
Back here with you at Wrestling Weekly, guys. On the line right now, he is the columnist from the Pro Wrestling Torch. You can check it out at pwtorch.com. Bruce Mitchell here is here with us for the Hot Topic tonight, man. Bruce, thanks for being on.
Anytime, guys. Hey, Bruce, I'm going to tell you what. It's such a cool night for me because two of the most, my favorite sarcastic people in the world, I'm DVRing Simon Cowell on the opening of American Idol.
Oh, that's right, yeah.
And I get to talk to you. He is my idol, for Christ's sake. I want to grow up to be just like Simon.
You know what? I wish you'd tell more people to stop singing.
you know what I like about, and a lot of people don't understand why I watch, but it's like the independent wrestling. People who have no talent at all go out there and are offended by people who are experts in the industry telling them they don't have any talent.
There is something to that, and it's never occurred to them. Yeah,
yeah, it so parallels independent wrestling. It really does.
Now, Bruce, I saw a classic clip last night, and we had talked about this on the phone, and I had no idea that this had happened. But in the early 90s, there was a WWF jobber named after you.
Yes, there was.
And it was sort of a poke at you.
On one taping, he wrestled the Big Boss Man, he wrestled in a battle royal, and Gorilla Monsoon said something like, there's no place for the likes of Bruce Mitchell in professional wrestling. And boy, was he right. So,
you know what? This is the first time I've ever heard about this. Who did you make mad to get that happen?
You know, it was around the time of, it was either, I believe it was right after or right before. Actually, I think it was right before, and I may be wrong, the federal steroid trial.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
so,
that'll
right
do
about
it.
All that kind of stuff. And, you know, that must have hit a nerve. So.
you made the mistake of reporting the truth, and somebody got mad about it.
Yeah, that's usually how it works. They usually
You're
mess
right.
it up. They usually don't get as mad if I mess it up as when I don't. So.
Well, that's kind of a compliment, I think, to have a jobber named after you.
I wasn't upset. I was kind of shocked, but I wasn't upset.
That's how I would know that I have finally made a mark, if there was a Doc Young just came out and lost every week.
Well, we all have that hope.
Yeah, I know.
Get Doc.
in fact, Bruce and I will start a write-in campaign, too. Maybe they could have another Hornswoggle named after you.
You guys would just rather have it be actually me, wouldn't you?
Bruce, you notice how I ignored that and moved right on to something else?
Yes.
Yeah, I was wondering about that.
I did. You caught that.
For higher ground, I think.
Anyway, let's move on to the hot topic for this week. This comes from the wrestling professor at armpitwrestling.com. He does column weekly. And on this week's column, it's called The New Rules of Promoting Wrestling, How to Make Money in 2008. I found it interesting.
This is not the guy that did the top 100 of modern wrestling, is it?
I don't know.
Did you see that, Bruce?
You mean the book?
No. This was on some website. Somebody cut and paste and sent it to several of us. And I said, this is the worst rib I've ever seen. I mean, it actually had some guys who could barely walk and chew gum at the same time listed ahead of people like Harley and
who knows?
I hope it's not for his sake, Ken. I know he does a weekly quiz.
I don't guess. I guess it's not probably not the same guy. That
To start out, he mentioned
he's going to be really disappointed if he is.
Yeah, he's not going to like this episode. Before he started out, he did a little preface. Said that Vince Russo had once remarked that in the mid-90s, the WWF was wrong for presenting a 1980s product. He was partially correct, but in 2008, Russo and TNA are presenting a 90s product, and a bad one at that. Some elements of the 80s and 90s should be used today, but a true leader should look and book for 2009 and 2010 using the booking of 2007, 2006. Confused? Yeah.
Yeah, what'd you say? Would you repeat that slowly again?
Right.
No, go ahead.
I drew a flow chart for it. I think I've got, yeah, okay.
He says booking wrestling is...
This, we need the guy, the math wizard from Numbers.
Right.
To figure this ball out.
He says booking wrestling is simple. Not easy, but simple. Here are the new rules. Number one, eliminate house shows. Embrace raves.
I find his humorous already. Go ahead.
And here's how he goes into this. He is... He said the guys today perform at a style and a pace that is far more demanding than in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Pro wrestling has never adjusted the house show schedule accordingly. WWE runs far fewer house shows than in the 80s, but it's obviously still a problem. TNA doesn't run a full schedule, but their guys do work indies, and they generally work a far harder style than WWE's guys. So, what can we do to draw money on the road, sell merchandise, build a fan base, and allow guys to improve their craft without causing physical pain?
I think you just the sentence where it said improve their craft.
Yes.
There's a clever idea. Then you don't have to do the hardest.
You don't have to be so hard.
If you understood psychology and timing, like we were talking, we had Tito Santana on earlier, Bruce, and we were discussing Kayfabe Commentary's got this DVD out about the feud that he and Greg Valentine had. And I said some of the telling things on the DVD was when Greg mentioned something, they wanted to take the belt off him, and he was about to walk out because the program had only, they'd only been in it 3 months. And I said, you can do 10 programs in today's climate in 3 months.
Right.
Tito was mentioning how to understanding what a baby face was. And I said, those who understand that, please raise your hand. You won't see a lot of hands.
His new concept, instead of house shows, is mini conventions called raves.
It's what?
He would call them raves, but they're mini conventions instead of house shows. Glorified meet and greets, have the people socialize, play classic matches on a huge plasma screen in some rooms, Q&As, and of course selling merchandise and stuff like that. Now, he says the drawback is young wrestlers don't learn their craft by performing in front of crowds on a nightly basis.
Wait a minute. They don't?
They wouldn't if you did this.
Oh, no. They certainly. Well, some of them haven't yet, but go ahead.
But he says you could always do what the real athletes do is practice. When you come to town, rent a ring in a gym, make the guys practice wrestling with veterans and road agents. It's not the same as performing in front of a crowd, but again, it's a trade-off. What are your thoughts on that, Bruce, to start off with?
Look how many wrestling conventions have been run.
Right.
Look at how many of in the last few years they've been several. There've been a lot of them. Look how many of those ones actually made money, and I think that would tell you something right there.
I think that when you
take away, and actually I'm thinking of a conversation that I had with Les a while back. When you take away the mystique, all of the mystique, and you're just hanging around with people, they're not stars. They're just people to you. I think that's a kind of a problematic approach, honestly. I mean, I just don't think that would work. I think that when you put them in the ring and they come into the ring and they walk out like they're stars. I mean, one of the things that when WWE comes once a year, the draw is see the stars you see on TV, and you go in and see them. And you can, the wrestling is mediocre. It's okay, but it's not storyline driven. It's just go see John Cena, go see Randy Orton, go see Jeff Hardy.
And here's the problem with the trade-out.
Hanging out with them and, playing with their wrestling dolls and watching their old matches,
Here's the problem with the trade-out and practice. We have practice. That's how they get started in the business.
Right.
The only reason I ran a promotion is so they had a place to try what they learned in practice. And doing it in front of you and doing it in front of one another is one thing, but you don't know what you're if it really works unless you're doing it in front of a live audience. And also, you can't learn timing in a gym with no people. Tito, I was just telling you about listening to the people, which is part of your timing.
Yes.
How do you learn that in an empty gym?
Right.
But then, hey, what would I know?
Number two goes on to eliminate TV tapings. Embrace post-production. He goes on, UFC draws...
Can we drug test this guy?
UFC draws more on pay-per-view than WWE does, and they've never, ever had to do weekly expensive TV tapings. TV tapings are yet another artifact of wrestling's past that are not necessary today. All TV tapings do are dilute the product, give away marquee matches for free, and cost a ton of money to tape.
Well, let me jump in real quick, and then Bruce can follow suit here. First of all, if we went back to what happened in the 60s and the 70s and the 80s called booking, we were just talking about that. And if you built the programs, if you didn't give away the store, if Bonnie on USA and whoever runs Spike didn't have their finger in the pot and not know what they were doing, you didn't have to give every angle away, then you could build to these programs and you could draw some money in the house shows, and you could also actually do better on the pay-per-views. But as far as it's post-production, it doesn't work with pro wrestling, because you got to realize UFC has a show, a pay-per-view, what, every 3 months?
Right.
Something like that. Then they have their version of Tough Enough, mm-hmm. which is fine. But then their secondary show, I forget the name because I watch it.
Unleashed.
But that's old matches. So
right.
If you bought the pay-per-view, why do you want to see those same matches again 3 months down the road?
Mm-hmm. But I think he's talking more about some of the build-up shows that the UFC.
Well, how
has.
Do you build something up if you don't do it?
Well, here's the thing about that. I think it's a misunderstanding of why UFC is successful, mm-hmm. and it goes right back to the booking in the 60s and the 70s, and all successful wrestling booking or all successful sports. It's that they show a product that gives you one guy. If it's Ken Shamrock, I'm using an old example, but Ken Shamrock doesn't like Tito Ortiz, and they both coach teams, and they get madder and madder at each other. Tito's a cocky prick. Ken's losing, but he's getting more and more frustrated. You want to see the two of them fight. That's what their television is.
Right.
And it's not that they didn't do a TV taping or they went to post-production or whatever it is. Their matches that are successful, their pay-per-views are successful, because you want to see Chuck Liddell fight Vandalay Silva.
And the reason you bought tickets to Greensboro.
You want to see a match between one guy versus another guy, and you don't know how it's going to turn out, and you'll pay to see the fight and to see the outcome of the fight. Well, that's
and the reason you bought tickets in Greensboro was what we did in Raleigh every Wednesday, right?
Right. It built up to that. And their television builds up. It clearly builds up one character, clearly builds up another character, and has a conflict between the two. And not only that, but their pay-per-views deliver an exciting fight with a winner and a loser. And because one guy wins, he goes on to fight this other guy. Because another guy loses, he either stops fighting or he goes on to fight another guy. There's consequences to it. There's consequences to wins and losses. You get one every time. There might be some controversy. There might be something unexpected. But it's not because they stopped doing TV tapings in a traditional sense or that they post-produce back. It's because their television clearly defines who their fighters are and why you want to see them fight. And why you're going to see a good fight when you see it. And that goes back to the 50s and the 40s and the 20s, I bet, and successful wrestling today. When WWE does something that works, it's because, right now you want to see Jeff Hardy. If Royal Rumble works, it's because you want to see Jeff Hardy take the title from Randy Orton.
Mm-hmm. Sure.
You want to see them fight. And that's as basic as it gets. It doesn't need reinvent it. UFC didn't reinvent it. They're just doing it. They're doing the same thing that's always worked.
That's the major problem down at the Impact Zone. Am I right? They're trying to reinvent it.
Right.
Yeah. They're trying to give you a show that you can drink a six pack and giggle at.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, or smoke a blunt and giggle at, and that's fine if that's your goal. If someone will pay you a whole lot of money to put a TV show like that on the air for whatever rating you got, but the way you get paid is to get people to take it one step further and put down their $29.95 to see the guys in this silly show fight, and no one much wants to do that.
Right. Number three goes on to say less is more, and basically what he's saying is if you're a fan of Kurt Angle, you've had a chance to see him wrestle on TV about 70 times this last year. If you're a fan of Chuck Liddell, you've had a chance to see him fight only 3 times. Basically, what he's saying is scale down the number of times.
You know what?
That's the first.
That's the first intelligent thing I've heard out of this. But the point. Let me just throw an example out.
Mm-hmm.
If indeed I were because I talked to a guy a couple years ago. In fact, he flew me out to Tulsa. And we spent, as a consultant, we spent a couple of days, and I laid out some ideas. And this was one of, how do you keep your talent when you don't have a huge turnover in talent relatively fresh? Okay, let's say you and Bruce Doc are going to be building a program, whether it's to take you into a major venue or a pay-per-view. But we're doing television to build to that. Okay, this week Bruce wrestles, and you do a promo. Next week you wrestle, and Bruce does a promo. Does a promo, I can't talk. But, I mean, the point is that everybody's not wrestling every week.
Right.
And Bruce will again tell you from his years of watching Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling that's the way it was there, too.
Oh, I mean, it was there in a lot of places. I mean, even wasn't the biggest fan of Hulkamania, but in the 80s when Hulk Hogan was WWF and they're breaking out nationwide, Hulk Hogan didn't appear on Wrestling Challenge and WWF Wrestling, those two syndicated shows every week. It was a special occasion when their biggest star, when their money-making star, showed up on television. And you perked up and knew that it was something there. No, there's definitely something to that. And they live in a world now where they've got to get their ratings, and WWF has got to deliver Bonnie Hammer her ratings and all that. But there is definitely a lot to that. If you're a big Motley Crue fan and Motley Crue plays across the street every single night of the year and you go, you're going to get tired of it, no matter how big a fan you are. But if Motley Crue comes to town once a year, that's a big special occasion, and that's a big party, and you're really happy. So,
right.
It's how you act. When Chuck Liddell shows up, when Chuck Liddell has a fight, then everybody perks up.
Bruce, let me run this by you because this is something I've mentioned here the last few months too. It drives me crazy. Since it's we're talking Greensboro here, and it's something that you're extremely familiar with. I used Flair and Steamboat. I said, as great as they were at the height of their popularity, at the height of their physical capabilities, they were still only good together for just so many matches in the same city.
Absolutely.
And then when you take guys that aren't Flair and Steamboat in their prime and put them together every week, every Monday night, and then put them on a pay-per-view, why am I paying $40 to see them? I mean, they can't wrestle each other over and over again and still have a fresh match.
It's one of the things to me that's really interesting. I mean, I don't think we even, realize how long the guys in WWE – they have been on top. It's a really pat hand. John Cena is one of the newer top main eventers, and he's been on top for every week. He's injured now, but every week and every pay-per-view for years and years now.
Yeah.
And he's wrestled, and they pretty much, everybody's wrestled each other as a heel and as a face back and forth across the line. And, some of them are great performers. I mean, Undertaker and Triple H and Michaels and all the rest of them. But we've seen them in every combination. And you get a new audience that comes in if there's a new star like Cena, but yeah, I mean, that comes to the fact that there's not as many, you tried to feed this, and where are the new guys coming from? And that's, it's getting harder and harder. I mean,
Yeah. Well, you know, well, the thing that really stood out to me with this, because I like all four of these guys, Murdoch and Cade and Spanky or Kendrick and London, and they were having some good matches, but then they were putting them on television, free television every week. Now they might throw a girl on either team or, you know, something like that, but then right. And then they're putting them right back together again on the pay-per-view, and I'm thinking, these are all four good kids, but they are not Steamboat and Flair.
Right.
You know.
Now, less is more. There's a lot to that. Not just Les Thatcher is more.
Either. Yeah. Well, he's, yes, you're right.
Finally, number four, clean finishes had turned around the fortunes of All Japan Pro Wrestling. Clean finishes were the norm in Japan for many years. In MMA, it's not even a question. Clean finishes are the rule, period, just like in real sports. 100% clean finishes, 100% of the time, no exceptions.
I am 100% for that as well. First of all, but here's the other thing. The two people or four people involved in the match have to be talented enough. You realize how many times Flair beat Steamboat.
Mm-hmm.
But the point is, Flair had to be able to get Steamboat over before he did that. Ricky had to be sharp enough to get himself, you know, to stay hot and still look at the lights for Flair.
Right.
There again, it goes back to developmental or lack thereof, because at the indie level, as Tito mentioned, so often it's the blind leading the blind. There needs to be more developmental. These guys need to be more skilled, and that can happen. And you could do well, but that's the other thing too. The people writing this stuff don't even understand clean finishes. Do you think they do, Bruce?
No, I think that as the generations go by, you know, old time wrestling becomes 1997 WCW. I mean, old time wrestling for TNA is that, you know, is when WCW was kind of folding up, and that, you know, you've had this generation of people that haven't seen it work. The people that have seen it work and know how to do it, they're getting older as every day goes by, and they're not having the opportunity to pass that on. And the ones that, you know, if you're getting that paycheck every week, I mean, WCW got that paycheck whether it worked or not, and TNA is not held accountable for their successes or failures.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, you think you do the same thing you did before whether it worked or not, because you get paid either way, and that's pretty tough. I mean,
to back up too, I think what Bruce mentioned about loss, wins and losses are meaningful in UFC. They used to be meaningful in our business. But, I mean, as an example, and I love Chris Jericho to death, and I think they blew the whole thing when they brought him back. And everybody says, well, Jericho did. No, Jericho didn't have anything to do with it. He didn't orchestrate it. Jericho could have got over if given the opportunity to get over. But I think the point I'm trying to make here is Jericho comes bouncing out the first night and is made a challenger for the title. And wait a minute, he's been here 15 minutes. He hasn't beaten any, had even wrestled anybody.
Mm-hmm.
And I think part of the build we're talking about here, and I think Bruce will concur, is that had Jericho had to work his way up to Orton, that's the story, and make
going.
You want to see it, and make Orton try to steer clear of him. Maybe Orton gets the bounty hunter thing, throws some obstacles in front of him, whatever. But, I mean, the point is, until you've got the people where they want to see it.
And you could have run that for a year.
And how many guys, if you stop and think about it in a logical sense, on that roster had won matches, had wrestled, in other words, how many guys should have been considered for a title match ahead of Jericho, not because Chris wasn't talented, but because he just walked back in the door?
Right.
Bruce?
Doing clean finishes that have consequences, that takes part of it. You have to add in the less is more, where you go slower, but it also takes intricate planning, and it takes what Les was talking about, performers who can win and lose and go somewhere with it, and there's consequences to it. But yeah, I mean, it helped all it turned around All Japan's business, and it's a big boon in mixed martial arts. And mixed martial, UFC, a guy can fight three times a year. not every month on pay-per-view and every week on television. That takes some real intricate planning that you can't do when you're just doing it by the seat of your pants every week and sort of building towards something toward the end of the year and paying more attention to it as WrestleMania time comes.
Now, instead of reinventing it, Doc, if the professor were to do this, if he, you know, while we're doing fantasies here, if tomorrow the two major companies had to actually make their titles mean something, if the champions only had to defend them every 30 or 60 days, mm-hmm. and if they were able to use that, if they were heel champions, as a way of blocking, or staying away from a logical contender, someone who seemingly had their number, if the belts actually meant something, if Bruce walking through the back looked at you and didn't like the way you were dressed and said, well, Doc, you've got to defend the title tonight because I don't like your clothes. If you didn't do it on Monday and Thursday and Friday, then it might mean something when you had to pay for it on Sunday.
Right. Absolutely. He goes on. It's basically some booking stuff. What he goes on in this next one is basically that UFC storylines are kindergarten simple. Randy Couture is a legend. He's coming out of retirement to get his title back, but he's 44. Tim Sylvia is a beast. Can he do it by the pay-per-view? Chuck and Wanderlei Silva have been the top light heavyweights in their respective companies for years. Politics have always gotten in the way of them fighting, but now it's going to happen. But both of them are coming off losses. Who's going to win the ultimate showdown by the pay-per-view? He says, compare these simple storylines to Kurt, Karen, Booker, Charmel, Nash, faces, heels, tweeners, reverse battle royals, thumbtacks on a pole, who's swerving who, where's Scott Hall, inside jokes, references to 97.
You're right, all that's crap.
Yeah.
I've told this to you before. I think I've said it to Bruce before.
Mm-hmm.
At the barbecue at Scott Casey's a couple years ago in Vegas, Terry Funk said to Jack Briscoe and Casey and myself, what's UFC remind you of? And his answer was our business in 1960.
Right.
So
he was one of the first ones to see it.
Yeah.
He definitely saw that. He saw it coming back to that and saw the link there. But no, that part of Wrestling Professor's column, I agree with that.
I also agree.
Yeah.
Yes.
This is a big, huge column. You could check it out at armpitwrestling.com. There's a lot more that, of course, we don't have time to get into. But there's a lot of at least interesting stuff on here to make you think about it. And basically what he said is if they followed the rules, there wouldn't be 8 hours of TV every week to book. You need a couple hours a month for infomercial-type shows that the network could run in rotation several times a week. And people would stay healthier. And, of course, basically booking would be a lot simpler. But it's an interesting read at armpit.com. Bruce, I want to thank you for coming on and discussing this and kicking this around with us. You guys can check out Bruce's columns at pwtorch.com, the homepage of the Pro Wrestling Torch.
I invite everybody, too, and I always enjoy coming on the show with you guys.
Bruce, it's always a pleasure, my friend. And, hey, I'm going to be up in Richmond, Virginia, the 14th, 15th, and 16th, doing a weekend training camp at Ground Zero Wrestling. If you happen to have
I'm thinking you mean in February.
No, March.
It's in March.
March. March 14th, 15th.
Okay. Well, I might. I mean, it's the first time hearing about it. It depends on how my school year is going.
But I'll tell you, a guy that's going to show up that lives
up
there.
I have my aunt and uncle live in Richmond, Virginia.
Is that right? Have you ever met Dickie Steinborn?
No, I have not. I've read about him for years and years.
Well, he lives up there, and he called me. I talked to him last week, and he, I guess, saw on their website that I was going to be there, and so he's going to come down and hang out, too, so you ought to make the trip if you get the time.
Yeah, that guy carries a lot of respect. I know that.
Yeah, hell of a baby face.
Bruce,
hell of a worker.
We'll see you again in a few weeks, and I really appreciate you coming on, my friend.
All right, Doc.
Bruce, take care. Always a pleasure, my friend.
You too, Wes.
All right, buddy.
Bruce Mitchell from PWTorch.com, the Pro Wrestling Torch, here on Wrestling Weekly. We got about 25 minutes or so left in the program. Let's get to some more news, Les.
Well, okay. Feed it to me, baby.
According to a report by the Figure 4 Weekly newsletter, the planned WWE-produced DVDs, I think we talked about these last week, for Sting and Randy Savage have now been canceled. Apparently, the DVDs were okayed without Vince McMahon's permission, and when he found out, he canceled them.
Huh.
Which I can understand that in Sting's case.
Well, you know, there's something there with Savage, and I mean, I have no earthly idea what it is, but I've heard, you know, several times that Vince is very adamant about not doing a thing with Randy.
Right.
Again, I have no earthly idea what the, you know, I'm sure it's more than just I don't want to do your finish, Vince, or something like that. I mean,
right.
You know, I don't know what it is, but anyway.
I don't really take stock in the rumors that's going on, and it would be, I think it would just be reckless to even say what they were.
Yeah, I don't have a clue.
WWE fans are soon going to be getting their weekly doses of high-energy entertainment in high def. Beginning January 21st, Monday Night Raw and AM Raw on USA, ECW, and SmackDown are going to be delivered in HD.
Okay, I'll be excited if you will.
I will. I'll be able to see Mickie James's freckles just right there. It'll be like I'm right there
okay.
In front of her.
whatever you say, Bob.
WWE is going to also broadcast its pay-per-views in high def, starting with Royal Rumble on January 27th. Word is, it took $20 million to be able to do this, to revamp the production to be able to broadcast in high def. So
wow.
We'll see how that turns out.
Well, when is it? Next year or something? You know, you got to have a converter or be, you know, because everything's going to be in high def.
Everything is going
you
to be
what?
On digital.
You know what? And I don't want to get into anything political because I'm really not a political animal. But I think with homeless people, schools needing help, wars, people needing food, our government is concerned that everybody has high def TV.
It's not actually high def next year. It's going to be it's digital television.
Well, or whatever, but that's really an important step, isn't it?
Yeah. Supposedly, this came about from the September 11th disaster, in that a lot of the firefighters and things like that had their signals crossed. There was too many, signals going on at the same time on analog signals. And a lot of people couldn't get through to who they were trying to get through with. So what they want to do is put all the TV stations on digital and leave the analog to police, firefighters, things like that in the country.
Well, at least that makes a little sense.
So
anyway.
That's the official story on why
is
they're doing
the deal?
This. Yes.
Okay.
Moving
how
on.
How much does your local senator make off of that, by the way?
I have no idea. I don't know.
How much stock does Congress and the Senate have in high-def television?
Who knows? Sean Daivari's 90-day no-compete clause with WWE expires today, meaning that he's free to wrestle wherever he wants. Of course, as he said on our show in the past and some other interviews that he's done, he's interested in joining TNA, so we'll have to see what happens with that.
Are they interested in him?
That's the question.
Well, I'm asking you. You're the expert here.
I don't know anything about TNA and what they think.
Why not?
I am lost when it comes to TNA.
Okay.
Who knows what they're going to decide. But they did do this. On Friday, TNA confirmed the release of Wildcat Chris Harris. However, that statement was pulled off the website on Saturday. PW Insider's reporting that this doesn't mean that Harris has come to a new agreement with the company. As he was offered a new deal recently and turned it down, he wasn't happy with it, and he instead opted to let his deal expire. Sources close said that Harris was unhappy in the last few months with his current role in TNA, and it seemed obvious to people backstage that he'd be leaving very soon. Word is that he's talking with WWE.
Now, and then I heard something, too, about being, I call it an agent, you call it a producer, they call it a producer. Mm-hmm. And I know Chris, as you know, and he's almost, well, not a neighbor. He lives across the river. I just don't see I just don't see that.
You don't see.
Well, I mean, don't get me wrong. I don't mean that he shouldn't or couldn't be an agent on down the road, but I just don't see at this point why that would be the case.
You think he's too young?
Yeah. Yeah. And I think, you know. Most of the agents have got a lot more experience. Well, you know, with the exception of Jamie Noble, and Jamie is old and you know, for old mentally for his age in terms of the business, and he is basically just a guy that's helped put together cruiserweight matches because he is one,
right.
You know.
Mm-hmm.
So
we'll have to see what happens with that, and if WWE does pick up on Harris. According to a report by PW Insider, former WWE ECW star Shelly Martinez, also known as Ariel, is going to be going by the name Salinas now in TNA Wrestling. She officially debuted for the company at the Final Resolution pay-per-view 2 weeks ago. Salinas.
Well, you know, that whole LAX mask guy who ran like a girl.
Right.
I mean, I didn't know or didn't care actually who it was, but I knew it was a female.
Right.
All along. I mean, you could just tell by the way they moved.
Right.
So
that was kind of
Well, you know, it was one of those deals where the world knew, it's just the announcers did.
Right. It was anticlimactic, and it just made the announcers look like they were dumb. it really did. The next WWE Films project is titled 12 Rounds, and it's going to start filming on February 25th in New Orleans. The film is going to star former WWE champion John Cena, which will be his follow-up role to The Marine, which was WWE Films' most successful movie so far. The background of the story features Cena as New Orleans detective Danny Baxter when a criminal mastermind named Miles Jackson III kidnaps his latest girlfriend, Janine, and orders Danny to participate in a battle of wits that lasts 12 rounds across the city. Filming set to finish on May 12th. It'll probably come out in the fall.
Okay.
Yeah.
When I flew into New Orleans to go to Natchez, right?
Mm-hmm.
They picked me up there and we drove into Natchez. I was kind of really interested as the plane made its approach into New Orleans to look out both sides of the plane as best I could, because I'm expecting to see all this devastation and I didn't see it.
Right.
Then the people that picked me up said, "Well, that's the Ninth Ward, and it doesn't get near the airport." But I mean, what I'm saying, I would have been happy or that's cool that there's a lot of devastation in New Orleans. I was just kind of surprised because I expected to see more than I did. I guess
right.
That's what I'm trying to say.
I don't know. I guess you probably have heard this. It's a big story this week, but the Signature Pharmacy scandal isn't just limited to wrestlers and athletes, as a number of stars from the entertainment world are now involved with it. Timbaland, who appeared on an episode of Raw last spring, has been named a customer of the Signature Pharmacy. He's a rapper producer.
Mary J. Blige. 50 Cent.
50 Cent, Wycliffe Jean, and Tyler Perry have named as well. That's
Let me say this. You know what? Again, you don't have to be huge. Steroids are used for a lot of things, rejuvenate bodies, you know, to lean you out, to, so, you know, and I don't sit down and watch all the rap videos and stuff, but, you know, from watching what I do see, you know, on award shows and here and there, finding out that some of these guys are using the juice doesn't surprise me.
It surprised me. Mary J. Blige surprised me.
Well, females do things to tighten up, too. I mean, to get smaller, to add some lean muscle, whatever. You know, women have to be obviously far more careful because it can cause facial hair. And with a singer, it can cause their voice to drop and get deeper.
Yeah.
What I'm saying is, realize anabolic steroids is male hormone, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if women use it, it creates male results.
Right.
See, so that's why they have to be very, very careful, especially with the boy. I have met some female bodybuilders that have some deep voices.
Right.
and actually, you know, some that I know of for a fact have been, you know, that need a razor occasionally.
Can you get those deep voices naturally just by working out too much?
What?
If you're a female.
What?
The deep voice thing.
Doc, where did you hear this urban legend or this myth?
I'm not saying it's a myth. I'm asking you a question.
Oh, no. Not that I'm aware of.
Okay.
Unless somebody hits you in the in the voice box or something,
right.
That good part of the huskiness, part of the the huskiness of my voice is due to being hit in the throat.
Well, I figured, like, okay, you know, working out, of course, you know, increases your testosterone level. Testosterone is the thing that makes your voice go low. So I figured women who worked out too much would
their voices there's all sorts of things. Do you realize that the gluten in wheat, if you eat enough of it, a male eats, it creates female estrogen?
No, I didn't know that.
Oh, yes, it does.
Wow.
Yes, absolutely.
I'll be sure
but I'm just, you know, that's a possibility,
see,
too.
I knew if anybody knew the answers to these questions, it'd be
all
you.
Females have a small have a percentage of the male hormone and vice versa. Mm-hmm. And it's just a matter. Well, what is commonly called bitch tit in the male, right?
Mm-hmm.
Gynecadastia, right? Which the male has a nipples, you know, elongated nipples like a female. That's in part that everybody thinks that that's necessarily a sign that you've used anabolic steroids, but there are males that have that without that use.
I'm starting to become uncomfortable.
Why?
I'm
Do you have gynecadastia?
No, I hope not.
Well, one very prominent wrestler I know for a fact had it. Well, several wrestlers had it, but one that is very famous in recent years had it removed.
Wow.
It's a surgical thing, but in part there is another drug that you can take that help when you come off your anabolics, that it helps prevent that. But what's happening there is if you basically cold turkey off the anabolics to cycle off, it draws the estrogen, the female hormone, into the nipple.
Wow. I've learned so much tonight that I never thought that even existed. I had to say that. That's all.
Well,
one
of the things about anabolics is so many people just don't understand them. Anyway,
right.
I mean, everyone has, you know, it's I won't say it's chase, you know, a witch hunt or anything, because it's not that at all. But I mean, just everybody assumes that you're big and huge and muscular if you take anabolic steroids, and all you have to do is inject a needle in your rear end, and you all of a sudden you look like Mr. America, which all that's just nonsense. I mean, do they help add muscle mass and lean you out? Yes, they do. But also, you have to eat properly and train properly too.
Right.
It's what I'm saying to you, you can't sit in the comfort of your strata lounger and eat bonbons and watch television and take, you know, Anavar or Winstrol V or Dianabol or any of the anabolic steroids and expect to look ripped and hard and lean, because you're not going to.
My head's spinning.
I'm trying to take
all this in, man. That's really interesting, though.
Umaga got caught up in that whole internet scam thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Does he appear like he's ready to step on some bodybuilding stage to you?
No.
I didn't think so.
All right. So it's all sorts of uses.
Well, it's eating right and diet, you know, like I say, training right and the whole thing. I mean, here again, when I say this, I'm not advocating or denouncing the use. You know, I mean, it's illegal, which, you know, it speaks for itself. But
right.
I mean, and otherwise, it's I look at it like, well, if you're over the age of consent, it's kind of your body. You know, it's your call. But I mean,
consequences.
Sure, but I mean, people just think, well, you know, you just take these pills and or these shots automatically, you know, it makes you look better. And that's not true at all.
Right, it's not how it works.
No, not at all. I mean, you know, it's, and you realize they were developed initially to help undersized children or, you know, I mean, there were medical reasons that these things were developed initially.
Mm.
It wasn't for athletes.
Right. Somebody just picked up on it one day. Guys, due to technical difficulties, cable systems supported by Shaw Pay-Per-View and Shaw Video On Demand were unable to air Final Resolution on January 6th. The replays are now scheduled as follows. January 21st, January 25th, and January 31st. If you ordered Final Resolution via Shaw and you were unable to view it due to technical difficulties, please contact your local pay-per-view provider for details on how to receive the replay. The cable systems affected included Access Communications, Sky Cable, Westman Communications, Coast Delta Cable, and Persona Cable. So if you had those, these are the time. These are the dates: January 21st, January 25th, and January 31st. And you can catch Final Resolution, of course, for no extra charge. Lastly, according to GameStop, the TNA Impact video game is going to be released on May 1st, 2008. I'm looking forward to that, Les.
Okay.
I've seen some clips of that. Have you ever played video games like Atari or anything?
Back in the day? You know what? I played Breakout and mm-hmm. I play some of the like what you call arcade games, right?
Right.
Where you match three things up or shoot at them or you know. But I don't get it. I've played some stuff like that. But I'm not into the whole. I've never played a wrestling game or football or basketball or stuff or the other. What is it where the hookers? You pick up the hookers. And,
Grand Theft Auto.
Yeah, I that's
a favorite at the young household.
Every 8-year-old should have one of those. I think.
Absolutely. No, I'm kidding. I'm so kidding. Anyway, guys, we've got good guests coming up. For the rest of the month, Jimmy Jacobs is going to be here with us next week. We've also got on the, I believe it's the 29th, Tammy Sitch going to be on the program.
Yes, she is.
I'm looking forward to talking to Tammy.
I've known Miss Tammy since she broke into business.
Yes. She was green as grass back in Smoky Mountain.
She wasn't even, you're right, she was. She had a natural talent for the business, too.
That's going to be a good interview. I'm looking forward to that. Don't forget, guys, we are being nominated for lots of categories at the Wrestling Radio Awards this year. You can go to WrestlingRadioAwards.com. You can
vote for Doc for Studley host. Of
Sexiest host of the year, Doc Young, yes.
Yes.
and no,
Chick Magnet, Doc Young, yes.
They actually have real categories at WrestlingRadioAwards.com, and you can vote once a day per computer. Until January 20th, and January 20th, that night is going to be the Wrestling Radio Awards. You can listen to them live. I believe it's at 8 p.m. Eastern. I might be wrong. You have to check the site, but January 20th is the day.
Yeah,
are we presenting
an award too, or something?
We are presenting an award, but they're going to have to tune in to see which one that is. I think.
Okay.
I
don't know which one it is either, so I wasn't going to let the cat out of the bag, Doc.
I'll have to email you with that stuff because it's important stuff.
Yeah, well, you'll get around
to
it, I know. Probably 2 or 3 days after we're supposed to do it. But.
Yeah, at some time you'll get it. The chat
room's, whatever.
The chat room's buzzing with football fever before we get out of here, and they want to know your picks for the rest of the season. There's
I see Green Bay and the Patriots in the Super Bowl. And as much as I like the story of Favre, the grizzled veteran, who having such a great year, damn, Brady and Moss are just like machines, man. I mean, I didn't get to see the whole game last week when I finally got back to the hotel. Patriots were down 7-0, but he only missed two passes. It was like completed 25 out of 27 or something like that. I mean, these guys are just like them or don't. I mean, I'm not a Patriots fan, but I'm fascinated by the way they're playing football. I was surprised that the Colts lost. I was surprised that Dallas lost.
I was very disappointed that the Colts lost, but I was very happy that the
Well, you know, I had no stake in either game, but I just thought, you know, especially with the Chargers when Philip Rivers and Tomlinson went out late in the game, but I don't see them. I don't see the Chargers beating the Patriots. And I feel that Green Bay at home
I know the Giants on the road have been pretty phenomenal, but I just like to see Favre go to the Super Bowl. But at this point, I really believe the Patriots are going to end up undefeated.
I have to agree with you on that one. If the Colts are going to have to be out of it, then yeah. I see the same thing you do, basically. New England, Green Bay in the Super Bowl, and New England takes
it. I like that. You know, the older quarterback has got all the records, the younger quarterback who's going to probably have them all before it's all over.
Yeah.
It's a nice storyline, I think.
Yeah. They are.
I look at everything like I do, you know.
Yeah.
I think that's, but that's what makes it interesting. It's like we were talking to Bruce, that, you know, some plain things that make things exciting and make people want to see them, you know.
I just became like a big baby when Indiana lost. I'm like, I don't care anymore. I don't care who wins the Super Bowl. I'm not going to watch it. So that's just me.
Look at this. I'm a big Ohio State fan. Here I was down in Louisiana over the weekend.
Right.
Look at all these people wearing the purple LSU caps with the BCS champions. And I thought, boy, it's a good thing I didn't wear my Buckeyes hat. I'd have probably been ridden out of town on a rail or something.
That's true. Guys, check out WrestlingWeekly.com every day for all the wrestling news. We've got the news board up. We've got the new forums up. New forums are getting there, Les. I'm working hard on getting them.
You're a fine man. I don't care what your mom says, Doc. You're all right. She's not always right.
Thanks a lot to WrestlingRN.com. Helps us out a lot with today's program. Next week, guys, Jimmy Jacobs is going to be here with us. So tune in Tuesday at 8 o'clock p.m. Eastern. Don't be late. Come on into the chat room live and ask questions for all our guests. Until next week, Les, it's
Doctor,
time for us to get out of here, man.
I'm headed for American Idol, and you're headed for ECW.
Absolutely.
All right.
We'll see you guys next week.
All right.